You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Made you look. The use of deception in attack in the martial arts. Has your martial arts instructor ever said to you something like, fake a right kick and then throw a left kick? And then your first thought is, how the hell do I fake a right kick? Has an instructor ever actually specifically taught you how to fake a technique? If the answer is yes, congratulations! You are in the fortunate minority of martial arts students. Be sure to thank your instructor. Most people who successfully develop a good set of such skills seem to develop it on their own, or through imitating others who have. You don't see a lot of reference to faking and feinting in the curricula of many martial arts. One exception was Bruce Lee. As part of his martial arts curriculum, he asserted that each of the various ways you can attack falls into one of five categories, one of which is called progressive indirect attack. The key word there is indirect, which refers to using deception before attacking. The most common form of deception is feinting. Let's take a deep dive into the concept of faking out your opponent. First, let's define some terms. The word feint and the word fake will mean exactly the same thing in this context. The reason we have two words for the same thing is that deception is used in many different sports, not just the combat sports. The word feint comes specifically from the combat arts, most especially from fencing and boxing. The word fake is applied more generally across a wide spectrum of sports. It's used just as much in football or basketball as it is in the martial arts. For our purposes, the two words mean the same thing. There is a technique used in indirect attack that is neither a fake or a feint, and it's called a false attack, and I'll describe it later. So how do you execute a fake or feint of a martial arts technique? That's actually quite easy to answer. You simply execute the first segment of the attack. How big of a segment? That's where it gets complicated. Should you execute the first 1%, or the first third, or the first two-thirds? Actually, you need to develop the ability to do all of these and any other significant calibration. Oh my God, Westfall is going to talk about another spectrum, isn't he? Yes, I am. You see, all opponents fall somewhere on a spectrum. On one end are the poor, nervous, jumpy individuals who will totally spaz out in response to the tiniest feint. On the other end of the spectrum are the murderous, hard-assed fighters who are way more concerned with hitting you than with being hit themselves. In addition, this attitude probably comes from hard experience, and that means they've already had plenty of feints tried on them in the past. You will need to feint almost the entire technique to have a chance of getting a response from these cold-blooded warriors. You also, however, don't want to do any more of the technique than is necessary to get a response. If you make the mistake of doing more of the fake than you need, there are at least three undesirable consequences. To understand the first of these consequences, you need to think about the window of opportunity that your feint is meant to create. That window is the amount of time between the moment that your opponent bites on your fake and the moment he realizes his mistake, that it was a fake, and reacts accordingly. That is the amount of time that you have to insert your technique, whatever it may be. If your feinting motion consists of more of the actual technique than is necessary to get a response, you're effectively starting your own follow-up later, and thus making your window of opportunity smaller. The second undesirable feature of doing too much of a feint is that it consumes extra energy, which is always at a premium when you're fighting. And the third, and perhaps most undesirable feature of doing too much of a feint, is that it commits you more deeply, moving you further into the range of your opponent's weapons. Naturally, the question now arises, well, how do I know how much of a technique to use for my feint? How do I learn where my opponent falls on this spectrum? Well, we'll get to that later. For now, it's also important to know that even when you do succeed in drawing a response from your opponent, what that response will actually be will vary from opponent to opponent. One opponent may respond to your feint by backing up. Another might attempt to parry the feinted attack. Another one may attempt to sidestep it. Another might shield himself behind his guard and charge into you in an attempt to smother or jam your technique. And yet another opponent may reveal himself to be that very dangerous species, the counterfighter, attacking into your feint with a punch, kick, elbow, or knee, with an attempt at what fencing calls a stop hit. And finally, experienced opponents are likely to mix their responses. Well, Sensei, if I don't know how extensive a feint to use on my opponent, and even if I do, I'm not sure how he'll react, what good are feints at all? Well, to start with, when fighting or sparring with an unfamiliar opponent, faking or feinting can serve as a form of intelligence gathering. That is its first function against this kind of opponent. You can throw a feint without getting as close as you would with a real attack. You then can see how the opponent responds and file that information away. It's probably smart to repeat this process one or two times to see if the opponent's response is consistent or varied. In this way, feinting an attack at your opponent is a bit like when a general sends a spy towards the camp of an enemy army. This is the beginning of learning both how much of your technique you need to feint in order to get a response, and what kind of response you do get when he reacts. As your knowledge of the opponent grows, you will be better armed for using indirect attacks against him. Aside from gaining information, feints and false attacks serve many other purposes. If your opponent likes to parry as part of his defense, your feint can draw out that parry and create an opening elsewhere. If your opponent likes to move in response to your attack, you now know how to make him move whenever you like, sort of like turning him into a radio-controlled robot. If your opponent likes to attack into your attack, you can now use your feint to draw that attack from him whenever you like, usually in order to defend against this attack and counter it. This concept of drawing a counterattack from the opponent and then countering the counterattack is a standard concept in fencing and is known as counter time. Here's another area of variability when it comes to indirect attack. What exactly is it that you are trying to deceive your opponent about when you execute a feint or a fake? One obvious answer is that you're trying to deceive him about what technique you're using. But that's not necessarily always the case. It's perfectly possible to feint a jab at your opponent, hesitate long enough for him to react, and then complete the jab. This means that in this case, you were not trying to deceive the opponent about what technique you were throwing, but about when you were throwing it. That means you can deceive the opponent about your timing. You can also deceive the opponent as to which limb you are throwing, feinting with your right arm before throwing the left, or feinting with your right arm before throwing the right leg. You can deceive the opponent as to the altitude at which you are attacking. For example, feint high with a jab to the head before following up with a straight right hand to the body, or feint low with a side kick to the knee before following up with an eye jab. You can deceive the opponent as to the line into which you are attacking. This can be a tricky concept to grasp in this audio format, so I'll pause to try to explain it further. The concept of the attacking line comes from fencing. The tendency in traditional fencing is to stand on guard with your blade pointed towards the opponent. And of course, your opponent will tend to do the same thing. When you're close enough to your opponent that your blades can touch one another, you will either engage the opponent's blade with the right side of yours, or with the left side. That means there are two possible lines. Thus, you can feint an attack into the line that is on the right of your opponent's blade before disengaging and then executing the real attack into the line on the other side. This works just as well in kickboxing. You can feint a jab that your opponent sees coming towards his head on a line that is outside of his left hand, and then throw the real attack on the line that is inside of his left hand. I mentioned earlier that there is a different form of indirect attack from a fake or feint, and that it's called a false attack. The difference between a feint and a false attack is that a feint consists of only part of the motion of a real attack. A false attack resembles a completely executed attack. What makes it deceptive is that you execute the false attack from just too far away from the opponent to actually land it. If the opponent is a perfect judge of distance, this will not work. But few of us are perfect. The false attack can look so real coming in that many people frequently respond to it. It's also one of the safest forms of deception, because it keeps you farther away from the opponent than all other forms, committing you and endangering you the least. I want to speak now about just what it is that makes an opponent respond to the deception of a feint, fake, or false attack, and that is his or her fear of or respect for your techniques. If you have not developed sufficient power and snap in your techniques, no opponent is going to respond very many times to your fakes or feints because they will not have developed any respect for your real techniques. Getting a bit more granular, if your opponent does not fear your hands but does fear your legs, it would be wiser to feint a kick in order to get a response rather than to feint a punch. I've known people whose low kicking game was so effective that with some opponents, all they needed to do was direct their eyes towards their opponent's legs to get the opponent to react. I had a bit of success with this tactic myself, first looking at the opponent's leg before kicking them in the head. Another fellow I used to know was so blindingly fast and so powerful with his spinning kicks that once he made this fact clear to an opponent, all he usually needed to do to get a response was to simply and rapidly turn his head, as if he were looking 180 degrees behind him for a split second. This looked exactly like the beginning of his spinning kick, and frequently resulted in his opponent twitching and jumping in fear. That's it. I hope you found this little journey into the minutiae of indirect attack informative. For millennia, using deception to overcome an opponent has been labeled as cowardly by a macho minority of fighters, frequently by those who are stronger than average, but who are also too lazy to develop the necessary skills to use deception themselves. By combining intelligence, determination, proper technique, and a strong work ethic, you can build your skills at indirect attack to a high level, leaving you a force to be reckoned with. Deception and guile can act as great equalizers, helping to level the playing field in the atavistic world of human violence, a world once dominated by only the strong. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, or check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.